Coming up on Chasing the Natty, week one of the 2024 college fantasy football season is finally here, and with it, we are kicking off our in-season content. This week, we'll be hitting on some potential takeaways from week zero, whether or not we're freaking out to some of the depth chart news that we've been hitting on this week, and then we'll be quickly moving on to what you can expect in week one. We'll be giving you some of our own start and sits for this week before reaching into the mailbag to answer some of y'all's fan-submitted start and sit questions. We've got all of that and more coming right after this.
Look at Ginty go! Breaks a tackle! He's 10! He's touchdown! Cook's going to throw the deep ball, and Burton passed the defense! Touchdown, Luther Burton!
Milroe going to run it again, got a lane, kicked in the turbo, Milroe! Goodbye! Touchdown, Bama!
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Wednesday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday and Wednesday mornings during the season at 6 a.m. sharp on both of those days. If you want to support the great work we're doing here, head on over to campuscanton.com, subscribe there with any of our fantabulous tiers. We have content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether it's CFF, Devy, C2C, College IDP, College DFS. Really, if you play it, we've got content, whether that's tools, rankings, everything you need to succeed. If you want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me on the show on Twitter. I'm at CFF underscore Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty, and welcoming back to the show today, we have Mr. Justin Leo, a.k.a. Volume Pigs on Twitter. He was my partner in crime for our in-season content last year, and he is back again this year to help us out sporadically throughout the year. Justin, how you doing, man?
Hey, man. Yeah, it feels good to be back, right? I don't know how the weather is in other parts of the world, but here in Toronto, the weather was getting kind of chilly last week. We had week zero games kick off, so you know, everything is just starting to feel right in the world all of a sudden, and happy to be back. You know, my DMs are flooded with CFF players complaining about that third-rate analyst, Nate Marquise, who you keep having on here. They're like, when are the starters going to be back, and when is the varsity team coming back? And I told them, no, don't worry, it's coming. Just be patient, and the day is finally here, and so I'm here to deliver, give the people what they want, and I'm stoked to be back, man.
Once again, I disavow any complaints of Nate Marquise being a third-rate CFF analyst. That man is is God's gift to the CFF community.
Nate, my favorite CFF analyst. That's why I say it.
I gotcha. Weather-wise, we have not gotten any of that nice, cool, crisp fall weather down here in Georgia. We are all boiling alive down here. It is absolutely fantastic. I'm just glad that any Georgia fans out there will get to stay inside of Mercedes-Benz this weekend for the Georgia-Clemson game rather than sweltering in the middle of Sanford Stadium. I have spent many week one kickoffs in Sanford Stadium, and let me tell you, it is not a great time when it's 100-plus degrees out. And so, but yeah, we are here. Week one content right around the corner. We got a lot to get to here today. We're kind of combining our week zero recap and week one preview into this one episode, mostly because, again, there wasn't really enough content coming out of week zero in order to really make it its own show. But going forward, for those of you out there, if you've not caught our in-season content before, basically what happens now that the season kicks off, we go to two shows a week. We will have the shows that will come out at the regular time on Mondays at 6 a.m. That'll be the recap and waiver wire shows. So I'll talk about the previous week, talk about some players underperforming, whether or not we need to freak out about that. Some players that overperform that I think, hey, we probably don't need to get those guys off the waiver wire. And then who I actually think you should be grabbing and putting on your teams there. And then Wednesdays, which is when you're listening to this show right now, that is going to be moving forward our preview and start sit shows. If you listen to last year's start sit shows, and if you, or really the previous couple of years, I believe I've done this, basically they've mostly been a Q&A format in the past where you guys out there will send us questions about your sit, start sit situations. And we are going to change that up just a little bit this year. We are still going to have fans submit a start sit question, so don't worry, y'all. That is still going to be a part of the show. We're just going to have to cut back a little bit on that. So we're probably going to hit maybe 3 to 5, depending on how much time we have at the end of each show. And we're going to move to a little bit more general format. And so going forward, we are going to be listing starts for players that are outside the top 60 at their respective positions, not in terms of ADP, but in terms of where they are at in the season, right? And then we'll be listing sits for players that are inside the top 40. So players that have done really well up until that point, and then maybe this upcoming week you need to sit them down on the bench. Like I mentioned, the fan submitted start sits will still be there, but the beef of the show is going moving forward will be a bit more general. Us talking about very specific players that in general you should be sitting, in general you should be starting in your lineups. So hope y'all are not too mad at me about that, but I think it'll be really, really good for the show moving forward. So we got a lot to cover here, Justin. It is between week zero and week one. And that basically means we got depth chart news coming out. We got some games to talk about with week zero, some takeaways we could potentially get over there. And then, of course, we'll be moving on to our week one preview. We already got our first starts and first sits of the year. And then, as well, we'll get into those listener sit start questions there at the end. So, Justin, what we'll start with here first is we've got a ton of depth chart news. Starting Monday, all the depth charts of all the different teams start coming out. Some are fantastic, they're truth, they might as well consider them the Bible. Some of them are nothing but damned lies. And so you're going to help us kind of figure out whether or not to be freaking out, because some of these depth charts have definitely had some surprises. So Justin, you're going to tell me, I'm going to give you a story, I'm going to give you something we noticed on a depth chart, and you're going to tell me whether or not you are freaking out about it or not freaking out about it. Sure. So to freak out or not to freak out.
Understood.
First one here. Memphis depth chart, Mario Anderson, the considered RB1 in CFF for the pretty much the entire offseason, was listed as an or with Sutton Smith for the RB1 position. Are you freaking out about that or not freaking out about that?
Well, this one's maybe a little more nuanced for me. So I wasn't as high on Mario Anderson this offseason as probably some others were. I wasn't out on him. But obviously, when there's a player like Blake Watson who leaves and then leaves behind this huge production vacancy, naturally there is sort of a lot of optimism who steps up. Mario Anderson, coming from a P5 school, South Carolina, makes the most sense. And he was pretty good at South Carolina. And as far as, this is just me speculating, but I assume he left South Carolina for more carries at Memphis. That's kind of what I would assume. So it's a little strange that if the plan is to have two co-starters, that move doesn't make sense, but that's not that uncommon in college football. We've seen a lot of transfers where it doesn't make a lot of sense, or it just doesn't work out the way the player had hoped. I'm not ready to really freak out on Mario Anderson, that being said, but I will sort of preface that and say he wasn't one of my top running backs to begin with. I like him, and I think he'll still have a pretty productive year. But maybe they do sort of have another runner who's a little bit more involved. I mean, that staff at Memphis, yeah, they really rode Blake Watson last year, and they have a history of doing it in years previous. So Daryl Anderson's another one from, I believe, 2019. They had another guy, I can't remember Gainwell, Kenneth Gainwell, of course, the NFL player. Yep. I think he was 2018. So they have a history here of pretty productive players. But actually, in both of those seasons, certainly in 2019, there were two runners heavily involved. It was just that one was really, really effective and ran for 1,900 yards. But both runners got a lot of carries. Could that be what we're about to witness this year? I wouldn't rule that out. I mean, I think Memphis is going to be such a productive offense in that conference that even if Mario Anderson is more of a RB1A to Sutton's RB1B, as long as that's the arrangement, I think it's fine. If it happens to be the other way, well, yeah, then it's probably going to be a problem. But they're listed as co-starters. As far as I know, for now, I'm going to assume he's RB1A. So I'm not ready to freak out just yet.
I think it's a really good point about, like, a lot of people instantly think this is like a stock down for Mario Anderson, but in reality, it could very well be just a big stock up for Sutton Smith as well. Like, obviously, we expect Memphis to throw the ball a ton, but if Anderson's as good as he is, and Sutton Smith is somebody that I had my eye on before Mario Anderson transferred from South Carolina to Memphis, I really thought like Sutton Smith was a great add at the end of last year if you were in like a dynasty or a keeper league, because again, there was a good shot that he could take over that Blake Watson role the next year. I think it's quite possible that both these guys get plenty of carries and both are efficient enough, like you said, to be both relevant. Like, maybe, yeah, you don't get the volume quite that we got with Blake Watson last year, but this offense is as good as we expect it to be. Maybe we don't need the volume, we can just expect some good efficiency here.
Sorry to cut you off. You can tell we're not in midseason form yet, folks. But one thing I will say is it might limit the ceiling, right, on Mario Anderson. Okay. But, you know, he can still have a productive season. That's all I'll interject there.
Yeah, Blake Watson was RB3 last year. Maybe we don't expect RB3 season out of Mario Anderson this year. But maybe we can, you know, still see the ceiling at RB15. I think it's reasonable.
Exactly.
So. All right, next one up here. My favorite team to talk about, but got to talk about Wazoo and their depth chart here. Josh Meredith and Chris Hudson labeled with an OR at one of the slot positions. Tony Freeman on his own in the other slot position. I will preface this by saying, like, myself and a lot of others, based on the camp reports for the longest time, were basically expecting that, you know, if you had two slot positions, which is the type of offense that, you know, Wazoo runs with Ben Arbuckle, you're going to have two slot guys, that you would have Meredith in one spot, Hudson in the other. Well, after Carlos Hernandez went down, there was some talk about Hudson moving to the outside, kind of leaving Josh Meredith all alone in that slot spot. And then there was some talk about Tony Freeman getting that other slot spot. And okay, things seem to make a little bit of sense there. But then we get the depth chart here, where Hudson and Meredith are being slotted into the same slot spot, and Freeman's all on his own. Justin, how are you taking this news?
Yeah, well, again, you know, maybe this is a theme of this segment, you know, it's sort of nuanced, and I agree with you. You know, following the camp reports, the narrative or the line of thinking was, okay, Hudson's going outside, big stock up for Meredith. You know, it sort of just almost slotted him in as, okay, he's going to be a starting slot. You know, we don't know who the other one is, but Meredith certainly should be one of the starters. The fact that, you know, he's listed as a co-starter with Hudson after we're sort of expecting Hudson to move to the boundary, that's a bit of, that's not great. And as far as looking at that room, if the only one who isn't listed as a co-starter in the slots is Tony Freeman, in fact, literally right before the show in my home league, I just picked Tony Freeman up off of free agency. So maybe that's, it gives you some insight into sort of how I'm feeling there with Meredith and Hudson. Granted, I don't think those guys were available in that player pool, but all that is to say, I mean, I'm not, a game hasn't been played yet, so I'm not ready to say for sure that one, you know, bury one player. However, if I am going to select a player from this room right now, given that depth chart, I'm going with Tony Freeman because he's the one who has one of those slot receiver spots locked down. But I'm not ready to pass off Meredith and Hudson, given the amount of buzz that we've seen all offseason, right? So these depth charts are not, it's going to sound strange, but they're not the be-all, end-all necessarily. We've seen, if you've played CFF for several seasons, there are all kinds of examples of guys who are listed as backups who end up having massive week ones or week twos. So it's not the end of the world if you happen to have drafted Meredith. It's not panic mode yet. You don't have to cut them. Keep them. See what happens. Wait a couple of weeks. Then maybe you start making a decision.
No, I definitely agree. And one other thing I think people need to keep in mind with these depth charts is kind of look for little quirks that kind of tip you off to the fact that this depth chart isn't quite what it seems. Because on this same depth chart, Carlos Hernandez, who we know won't be back until at least the bye week, is listed as one of the co-starters for one of the outside positions. Now it's a three-way or don't, but regardless, I should tell you a little bit about some things are a little off here. And I think the right tackle, I think Nick Allen said in our Slack, also is expected to miss multiple games, is listed as a starter. And
right,
so
yeah. Intern's gonna get fired or something there, or maybe
exactly right. Like some basically tells you, like, okay, this isn't the end all, like you said, this is not the end all be all. A couple of ones here that are similar here, so I'll throw them both at you here, Justin. Sure. Landon Ramsom, our expected wide receiver one for Rice, is missing from the Rice depth chart, so it seems pretty clear that he will not be playing this weekend. And then Kelly Akari, the transfer wide receiver from UTEP at Mississippi State now, is also missing from his depth chart. Based on what I've been able to find, this has more to do with them being unavailable rather than, you know, yeah, an actual, like, you know, all of a sudden they're third stringers on their respective teams. But how are you interpreting this, Justin, if you have these guys on your roster?
Yeah, well, no, and I agree with you on these two names specifically. My impression was that this is due to injury. Usually when there is a player missing inexplicably, that's my first assumption. In fact, a similar player, although not quite as relevant, but Tulane's Shaz Preston was another receiver who's just not even on the chart. Somebody actually DM'd me today and asked me, like, yo, what's the deal there? And I just said, I haven't heard of anything, but I assume he's injured. And that's my assumption of both of these players. I'm going to still assume both of them are going to be starters. I would not cut. Well, it depends on who's available. If anything, it is nuanced in what sort of league you're in. But I mean, I don't really, unless you really need those spots week one and there's somebody you really want to pick up, I would probably hold both of those players, certainly Ransom. Maybe you can make an argument to cut Kelly Akieri, just because it's fun, whatever. Yeah, sorry. I'm going to butcher some names on the show. Apologies, folks. Maybe you can make an argument because there's lots of questions. There's more questions than answers there of that Mississippi State squad. And to be fair, that's somewhat the case with Rice as well. But I'm more of the position of, okay, I think both players are injured week one. If you can find an injury update out there, if they're both going to be injured for a while, okay, cut them. If this is just a week one unavailability thing, I would just hold them, see what happens week two.
I'm a little more concerned probably about Ransom than Akari because of the matchup this weekend, right? So Rice is playing Sam Houston, which again, you know, AAC competition versus, you know, CUSA competition, you know, you would expect the AAC to still be the clear favorites there, but regardless, a much closer matchup, right? Akari being sat for 1 week screams a little bit more precautionary, although again, it's been talked about he's been banged up in fall camp already. Ransom, we have not heard anything out of fall camp about him being unavailable, and now all of a sudden he's missing from this depth chart against, again, another group of five opponent this weekend. And so that tells me that's a little bit more serious, that they're kind of keeping that under wraps. And so I'm a little worried about Ransom moving forward from that perspective, but I'm not going to try to extrapolate too much there. Next one up here, Damian Taylor, running back out of Troy. A lot of people, myself included, I took a lot of Damian Taylor shares at the end of my drafts because, hey, he looked like he was clearly the next up running back at Troy there. New staff, yeah, I get it, but man, he looked good last year. He was RB3 on the depth chart. Personally, given some of the talk about how it's likely going to be a committee regardless, I've dropped a couple of shares of Damian Taylor in order to open up some spots on some of my rosters already this week. That's how I'm personally reacting to it. Yeah, I don't want to be overreactionary there, but between him, his spot on the depth chart, and again, that talk of it being a committee regardless, I figure my hands are clean. Might as well move on. I got this one wrong. What about you, Justin?
Yeah, well, so because following the quotes coming out of camp all offseason, it was sort of quite clear they wanted to go of a committee. So, you know, and you mentioned the new staff there. So he's coming over from Notre Dame, the head coach, I believe, Jared Parker.
Yes, sir.
And anybody who's playing CFF last year, you'll remember their RB1, Audric Estime, bell cow for that program, really productive player. And then Troy, the program that he joined, you know, had I think it was actually the carry leader in the FBS, Kamani Vidal.
Yep.
So you kind of sort of piece those two puzzles together and it sort of makes sense in terms of a recipe for potential success, except for the fact that, you know, they were pretty explicit. They wanted to do a committee, at least to start the year. But sort of contradictorily, I think that's the word, maybe not, whatever. So there were reports, even though the coaches were saying it was going to be a committee approach, that Damian Taylor was the leader of the group. So it was sort of like, okay, I don't really know what happened. Yeah. Well, also, yeah, what happened, but also, you know, just sort of reading the contradiction there, I'm not really sure what to make of that. And then all of a sudden, you know, a few months later or a month later, you know, depth chart releases, he's third on the chart. I suspect anybody who drafted Damian Taylor, sort of how you explained there, probably took him late, like a sort of as a flyer. So those are the types of players where you take a chance, you see what happens when the depth chart's released, and if you don't see what you like, then
He's
flip him
cut.
for somebody else. I mean, yeah, just for me, I don't have any shares, and I wasn't drafting him or acquiring him. But if I did, yeah, I would probably do what you did, Jared, and probably take a shot with somebody else at this point.
All right, continuing along here. We'll head over to Texas Tech, where there was a lot of talk about Josh Kelly potentially moving to the slot, which has been uber lucrative whenever Zach Kittley is running the offense that he wants there. But now on this depth chart, he's back outside. And then, to the surprise of quite a few people, five-star true freshman Micah Hudson not starting among the starting four there. In fact, I think it was what, Caleb Douglas or whoever got that fourth spot, basically somebody that nobody was really talking about. And so, for people drafting Kelly and Hudson, how should they react to this news, Justin?
Oh, well, yeah, I think quite differently for the two players. So Hudson, for sure. I mean, it's always an uphill battle for a true freshman to be a CFF relevant player, let alone CFF elite player. A lot of things have to go right, and the depth chart really has to shake out. Now, it's not to say that because Hudson's not listed as a starter that he won't be a starter during the year. From reading the quotes from the staff, I mean, they seem pretty fired up about using him this year. So I think he's going to be playing a lot as long as he's healthy. Like a lot of freshmen, he's not starting game week one. I don't know that that's a huge surprise. I think he will start or be a starter later on down the road, or at the very least, he'll be the fourth man in the rotation. He's going to play regardless of where he's listed. Kelly, I'm not freaking out. In fact, I was kind of, it was more sort of a surprise to me early on that they were mentioning that they wanted him to be, or that they're thinking of putting him in the slot because he's a little bit bigger. He's not really the classic. I don't think he was a slot player at Wazoo. Actually,
No, he was an outside guy at
he's
Wazoo.
an outside guy. Yeah. So it was a bit of a surprise that they even mentioned that in the first place. However, not all is lost if that was part of, why you drafted him, because they have said they want to move him around. I think both you and Nate even messaged me that in the Slack chat when I mentioned he's not in the slot, and you guys sort of referenced those quotes. So I think they are going to start, have him in the slot sometimes, going to play on the boundary. In my mind, that's a positive thing. I mean, it's anytime I hear coaches want to get players moving around, that to me means, okay, he's going to be a big part of the game plan if they're really going out of their way to move him around. So I think he's going to be fine. I'm fired up about Josh Kelly. I have a few shares of his, hope he's really good this year. And I'm not ready to completely write off Micah Hudson. However, if you happen to have drafted him, you might be able to get away with cutting him this week and then picking him back up later on. That's probably what I would do.
All righty, next one up here. Keep it in the Big 12 here. Going to TCU. Probably the number one wide receiver that people were drafting out of this TCU wide receiver room, Eric McAllister, the transfer from Boise State, not listed as a starter, definitively on the in that second wide receiver group for the Horned Frogs there. Justin, what are you doing with your Eric McAllister shares if you have any?
I cut him. So I did have a share of his, but I cut him a few weeks ago when sort of whispers were that he wasn't going to be in the ones. This one just sort of confirmed it. So I was actually, I guess, satisfied when the depth chart came out. I was like, okay, I didn't make a mistake cutting him. Not that I'm not going to have egg on my face. Well, who knows? I mean, in the end, he could still work his way into a starting position. But if I had a share of his still, I would cut him. And I did have a share of his 2 weeks ago, and I did cut him.
All righty, last one here. Going over to Oklahoma. Gavin Sawchuk listed as an or a co-starter with Javonte Barnes at the RB1 position for Oklahoma. A lot of people were drafting Sawchuk with the hope that he would kind of continue what he was able to do at the end of last year. Really kind of broke away as the clear RB1 for that offense now. Is this going to throw a wrench in the plans of people who drafted Sawchuck here? What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, well, so this one hits close to home because I have drafted Sawchuk a lot in various different drafts. I'm pretty fired up about him. So absolutely not, in terms of cutting him. I don't
No,
know. I don't think
absolutely
that's
not.
the question. But in terms of freaking out, it's fair to be a little bit worried. I mean, I think anybody who's seen sort of me draft before will probably be familiar with the fact that I'll take four or five running backs in the first six rounds. And this is one of the reasons, because I just take it as a given that some of those guys are going to bust, at least one. I hope that's not the case with Sawchuk, but he's one of those guys who I have been drafting a lot. And he's, that's one of the reasons why I take so many in those first six, because this kind of stuff happens where you feel really good about a player. And to be clear, I'm not out on Sawchuk yet. Again, until games have actually been played, I'm not going to say definitively that this guy is done. They've got a great sort of 3 week stretch to open season, some really easy games. So it could be the case where he's productive, but he is sharing carries in those first 3 weeks. If you're in a league that does trades, you might want to sort of kick the can, see if you can maybe trade him. If you see he's splitting carries but still scores a lot of points in those first couple of weeks, maybe think about it. I'm a little concerned, but I'm not freaking out at this point. We will see. Nate seems to have seen this coming for a long time. That worries me. Nate, for those who don't know, is an OU fan. He follows that program closely. So we'll see. I'm a little worried, but not in freakout mode yet.
Alrighty, that's pretty much it for kind of the major depth chart news. I'm sure there's a story here or there that I have missed out on, but again, we only have so much time. And we do need to go ahead and take a look at some of these week zero reactions that we can have here. I kind of wrote down three major ones here that I felt like we could kind of dive into with Florida State, New Mexico, and Hawaii. Justin, if we get to the end of these and you have another thing that you really want to bring up, please let me know. But we'll go ahead and start with Florida State. Obviously, this was the big story just in college football in general this year. Florida State, top 10 team going into the year, loses their first game in Ireland to Georgia Tech. And really, kind of the big takeaway, I think, here is that if you were taking shots on this offense for whatever reason, really, whether it was, Malik Benson at wide receiver, Roydell Williams, or Toa Fili at running back, or DJU at quarterback, you didn't really like anything that you saw here. Again, five running backs got touches in the first two drives for Florida State to kind of give you an idea of how much they were splitting it. Roydell Williams led the team in carries with 12, and he only averaged 3.2 yards per carry, so that offensive line wasn't really working very well, which is very disappointing considering the fact that Georgia Tech was a outside the top 100 in rushing defense last year. And so that either Georgia Tech's D line got way better, which to be fair, they did look a lot better, or this Florida State running game is not as good as we were anticipating it being. DJU was effectively neutered. He had negative air yards per pass attempt. A very obviously that graphic's been going around, but might as well reference it here as well. Like they were not letting him throw it downfield, especially for the first half of that game. They kind of let him go a little bit more in the second half, but you still didn't like what you saw there. And then Ja'Kai Douglas and Malik Benson each got six targets. They led the team in targets, and that's just not going to do it for CFF in general. Neither, I think the highest reception yardage was 55 yards for wide receiver. So, Justin, Florida State, no go for CFF, or do you think they can turn it around?
Well, I never like to write off a team completely after first game week zero. And so for those that don't know, I do weekly recaps. I won't cover every game, but this is one game I covered from week zero. And in it, I said, college football teams progress throughout the season. We saw with Alabama and Jalen Milroe last year, big transformations can happen over the course of the season. However, this was, and we have to just sort of call it for what it is. This was a very disappointing performance from FSU. I think the most surprising component of it was just how much they got handled on both lines of scrimmage. That's concerning. In terms of what I was looking for, I think my biggest disappointment was tight end Kyle Morlock.
I agree.
There was some reasoning there. You could talk yourself into drafting him in a sort of deeper format. There was a line of logic there where, okay, maybe he has a good season, but it does not appear to be the case that he's stepping into a bigger role. At least he didn't in this game. We'll see what happens. I think my next disappointment was that wide receiver room. Now, I didn't have huge hopes, but I was sort of, a little bit optimistic or cautiously optimistic about maybe Malik Benson or someone else stepping up into Keon Coleman's shoes. That obviously didn't happen. And I think with regards to DJU, he's been around college football for a long time now. He's been a starter for several seasons at different programs, in programs that have had a lot of success with the quarterback position, actually. So he's had a lot of things going for him, and he still seems to be the same guy that he was when I saw him last, or the last time I watched him, which was probably that Clemson Georgia game a few years ago. He still can't really push the ball downfield. He can't really do a lot. And this is kind of evidenced by the fact that his coaches don't really let him do a lot, right? They don't trust him to do things. And that's going to hurt the passing game. And then the running backs, there's not much to say there. Was not good. I was pleasantly surprised by Georgia Tech, but very disappointed by FSU.
All righty, we'll move on to my next point here with the New Mexico offense. This is one of the teams I had my eye on the easily the most coming into the weekend. Started off great, man. They got up 17 points. They ended up losing the game. I think things just kind of fell apart. They ran out of steam at the end. Montana State is a really solid FCS program, so again, you're not going to knock them too much for that loss right there. But I was, for the most part, especially in the first half, pretty pleased with what I saw from this offense. Again, probably the big takeaways for me: one, Luke Weisong, if you're going to target a pass catcher in this offense, I think that might be the direction that you're wanting to go. Again, he's a returner from last year, has 7 targets in this game, 6 receptions, 95 yards. Obviously, he had the huge play. I believe it was the second drive of the game, or I think it was like 50 something yards. But clearly, again, one of the top targets here. He tied with Ryan Davis for the highest number of targets, but Ryan Davis only caught 3 of his balls, while Weisong seems a bit more sure-handed there. And we know for a fact that when Brock Mendenhall gets his offense going, you can basically lock in at least one wide receiver for 100 targets. And I think Weisong currently is probably your best bet for that. It's just a matter of scoring opportunities moving forward here. The other names that really kind of pop up here: Eli Sanders. I was dismissive of people who kind of liked Eli Sanders at New Mexico this offseason because, again, Bronco Mendenhall's history of running backs is just absolutely putrid. Well, he just comes out and has 17 carries, 17 out of the 29 total rush attempts for the offense here. That's pretty dang incredible. I don't think I've ever seen a Bronco Mendenhall running back get that many carries. And so I'm not saying, like, go drop all your fab for him or anything like that, but it's definitely something I think you need to keep an eye on, especially this next upcoming week, to see if that's something that continues, right? Again, he's at 8.8, or excuse me, 5.1 yards per carry, so that's pretty solid. Finished today with 87 yards. No touchdowns or anything like that, but still pretty solid for a Bronco Mendenhall running back. And then, well, Dampier finished today with a pretty solid fantasy day, 2 touchdowns, 1 on the ground, 1 through the air. Him only getting 4 carries is pretty worrisome if you were drafting him as like a late round option. Now, he did, again, he finished the day with 35 yards and a touchdown on the ground, so it's not like a complete zero on the day in terms of the rushing department, but you're definitely hoping for more moving forward. But Justin, looking at this offense, again, they scored only 17 offensive points in this game, which is definitely cause for concern. They kind of fell apart in the second half, but is this offense good enough to invest in for CFF moving forward into this year?
Yeah, well, I was like you. I was pleasantly surprised with what I saw. I was quite interested to see how Dampier would look. I sort of figure Montana State is comparable to sort of a Mountain West Conference opponent. I mean, they're one of the better FCS programs, so I think it was a good bellwether to see sort of what we could expect. Again, this is the first game of this new regime, so I mean, things are probably going to get better, not worse, going forward. As far as their individual players, yeah, I agree with you in terms of, some of those skill players. What I would say is, if you're in a regular league, I'd be surprised if Eli Sanders continues that yards per carry this week because they're playing Arizona.
True.
Then they have a bye and then they play Auburn. So for the next 3 weeks, if you're acquiring Weisong or you're acquiring one of these guys, just know that you're probably going to be holding them. And if you have to start them in
Good
your league,
call.
probably not going to want to start them. So depending on how badly you want these players, I might sit that one out. Just wait a little bit. Sort of like Jalen Buckley last year, some of you might remember. People picked him up, and then a lot of them dropped him, and then you just picked him up like somebody else picked him up in like week 4, and then you just profited for the rest of the year. So you can play that game if you want. If you really want Dampier and he's available, fair enough, go for it. Just know ahead of time, okay, he's probably a guy you're going to stash for at least a few weeks. But yeah, I liked what I saw. I was also surprised by that running back carry share. I don't know what happened to Andrew Henry. There were some quotes out in the offseason that he's running with the ones. I don't even think he played yesterday or he played sparingly. I don't know. I don't really care anymore at this point. I liked what I saw. Eli Sanders looked pretty good with his carries. And if they're going to give him that kind of volume, I will be interested, but it has to become a pattern first before I'm sort of fully bought in.
Yeah, Henry did not play a snap yesterday, so that could be something that impacts him down the line. Very good call out about their schedule here in the next couple of weeks. And I think, again, you're 100% right. That happens every year where people will pick up players not realizing the schedule ahead of them is awful. And then when they bust a couple of weeks in a row, people who may not be paying attention and who have them, you know, they're frustrated, like, oh, these guys aren't giving me any points. I'll just drop them. And then you're like, well, now they get into conference play. Let's do this. Yeah. Last one here I want to discuss is Hawaii's offense. I want to make sure I'm not overreacting here, but I am a little concerned about this Hawaii offense because they were going up against Delaware State, which if you look into the recent history of Delaware State as a football program, you know that they are barely a football team. This is a doormat. Hawaii was favored by 40 points over them to give you an idea of just how poor of a program Delaware State is in general, right? Hawaii came out of this game with barely a positive EPA per play, which for those of you who may not understand that statistic, basically that kind of measures the expected points added per play of an offense. Basically, how efficient are they at scoring? And they barely got positive EPA per play in this game. I believe at one point they had a negative EPA per play. And that's just against an opponent that poor is very concerning. Yes, there clearly was weather here. They were dealing with a tropical storm nearby. They had wind gusts of up to 50 miles per hour. That's going to affect anybody, right? But regardless, like, Shager finishes the day 50% completion, only 6 yards per attempt, just over 200 yards. Just, we're in the third year of Timmy Chang, right? A lot of us were buying into, you know, Pafele Ashlock and Stephen McBride before he, you know, did his thing. But anyway, just wide receivers in general for Hawaii thinking, okay, it's year three. Here's the big jump, right? Either Shager's going to get better or one of these guys behind him is going to step up. And this is just not a very good first game to see here. Obviously, Pafele Ashlock did his thing, 8 targets, I believe 80-something yards. No touchdowns, but I think he had he was tackled 1 yard short of the end zone. So I'm not going to take away too much there. But regardless, I'm not even concerned about this offense being worse than last year. I don't think they'll be worse than last year, but I am kind of concerned that maybe they're the same. And you might be saying to me well, Jared, they're the same. McBride and Ashlock were fine last year. I'm like, yeah, but they were wide receiver 46 and 54 last year. And we were drafting these guys as high as, you know, Pavelli is a top five wide receiver in some drafts. McBride, back when he was being drafted, was being taken in the wide receiver 15 to 20 range. And so I'm just a little concerned that we're not going to see this big bump that we all were kind of hoping out of Hawaii this year. What do you think, Justin?
Well, I'm like you. I was disappointed by that game. I mean, again, and if the folks at home are sort of looking at this and wondering if this is sort of inconsistent, considering we were high on New Mexico despite 17 points, got to consider the opponent. And Jared, I think, explained that pretty well, that this is a game where, you know, if Hawaii is going to flaunt their stuff this year, this would be a great way to kick off the year. I actually stayed up, you know, at least and watched the first half of that game past midnight Eastern time. Because I was pretty fired. It was week one or week zero. So, of course, I wanted to watch as much football as possible. And I was also interested to see Braden Shager and what this offense could do. And in one of my own leagues, I tried to hedge a bet and pick up Alex Perry, hoping he'd become that wide receiver too. I think that was my primary two major disappointments. One was Shager. And I know there were some heavy wins. So let me acknowledge that right away. But I was watching that game and Shager missed a lot of passes. And I mean, a lot of passes. I mean, you know, he's been the starter there now for quite some time. And I'm starting to wonder if this is just the ceiling, right? I used to think, okay, you know, when this system really gets rolling with Shager, things are going to start exploding, but that hasn't happened yet. I'm not worried necessarily about Ashlock. I think he's going to have a good season. I'm a little surprised to hear your stat mentioned there that him and McBride finished as wide receiver 45 and 54. Is that on a total points per basis, throughout the season?
Yeah, total points.
Okay, because if I recall, in one PPR formats, they each averaged 15 or 16 points per game. Granted, that's probably not what you're expecting if you drafted one of them in the second round, like Ashlock or something.
Yeah, I got McBride at 13.55 points per game, and Ashlock was 13.04 last year in half PPR.
Non-PPR or half PPR?
Half PPR.
Okay. Well, I mean, in half PPR, yeah, those numbers aren't great. I think in full, they were closer to 15, which is a little bit more palatable. Nonetheless, probably not what you're hoping for if you're drafting Ashlock in particular, who's probably in the second or third round. And you know, I mean, that's an unfortunate part of drafting. I mean, you draft somebody in the second round, it's not always going to be the case that they're literally a second round level wide receiver. But if they're still pretty good, and I think Ashlock is still going to be pretty good this year, just on volume alone. As soon as I saw that Colt Brennan haircut, I knew he was in for a big season, regardless of what happens. He's gonna get his. But I think sort of my two major disappointments was quarterback play, and there wasn't really a wide receiver who stepped up, not in an obvious way. Alex Perry was second in snaps, but I forget his name. But the guy who was actually second in receiving was somebody else. You probably have his name handy, Jared.
I got it right here, Dekel Crowdis. That's
There he
the
is.
name. That's the name that I'm keeping an eye on. Again, number one in the team in yards per reception. He was fourth in the team in snaps, but again, he was only four snaps behind Alex Perry, who, like you said, he was second. So there's not a huge gap between those guys. If Crowdis continues to play the way he did this past Saturday, you have to imagine that they're gonna get him more and more opportunities there.
Yeah, certainly. There's some nuggets there that were interesting and stuff that we can keep an eye on. What I was hoping was something very obvious. For those who recall week zero last year with McBride and Ashlock just sort of popping off together, I was hoping somebody else would just make it obvious. Didn't happen. Doesn't mean it won't going forward. But yeah, overall, I was disappointed. But I'm still in on Ashlock. I think he's going to have a good year. Was never really in on Shager. Hopefully he shows some improvement this
I
year,
mean,
but
he had the four touchdown day.
I know, which is crazy, because I was watching the game and it was such a poor performance. But he ended up with like 30 points in like a regular 4-point passing touchdown format, if I
Yeah,
recall correctly.
he ran in two touchdowns.
That's why, yeah, because he ran in a couple later in the game, so he salvaged the day. He could be one of those classic cases of bad quarterback but great CFF quarterback. I don't know. I'd like him to complete a few more passes. That's kind of what the system is predicated on. But he had a good day, so you're right. I can't poo-poo it too much.
All righty, let's move on here. Again, enough week zero, enough depth chart stuff. Let's move on to week one here. And again, what we're going to do is we're going to list out some of our starts for this week. We're not going with obvious guys. What will happen going forward is that, again, I'll update every single week my, top, or I'll download from Fantrax the top performing players up until a certain point in the season. And if you're within the top 60, I'm not listing you as a start. Then it's pretty clear for most people that you're doing very well at that point. So I'll be looking for players outside of that. What we'll do this week, because we are, only week zeros happen, so we're like only a couple of teams have played. We're just gonna list some guys that were outside the top 50 at their respective positions in ADP. As guys that we are starting this week. And Justin, I don't know about you, but I personally went through all of my leagues where I have to sit and start. And I am putting players here that I am actively starting this week, so that this isn't like me just throwing out a name to you guys. This is somebody that I personally will be relying on at least one league this week that I feel pretty solid about.
Yeah, well, I can't quite say the same for me. So let me be honest with the audience here. I might have misunderstood the assignment slightly because I'm going a little rogue here. I'm going quite deep. So for those of you who are watching this, you can see the graphic right now. Yeah, these names are, if you want to get creative this week, or if you're in a deep league, because I went pretty far down. These guys are undrafted pretty much every league.
I would say Justin didn't want to actually look up our ADP on campusdecanton.com, and
Exactly.
he just said, "All right, screw it. I'm gonna just pick guys that I know for a fact nobody drafted." But
That's
also,
precisely
I like
right.
all three, or I like two of these three picks. I'll ask you a bit more about one of them. I'll go ahead and run through my three guys here just to kind of keep things moving here. But my number one guy here that I am going, or my first guy that here that I'll say is, in my opinion, a pretty safe start this week, is Kalel Mullings, the running back out of Michigan. I think this is a pretty safe week to kind of test out those waters for Kalel Mullings, right? The staff has not been able to shut up about him pretty much all offseason. While, Donovan Edwards, you think, is still your top guy, they've been talking a ton about Mullings. And again, if you watched the national championship last year, Mullings was actually that second running back out there. He very much fits more of that Blake Corum mold there. So if they're going to try to replicate that, Mullings might actually be that guy. And this matchup works out really well. So even if Donovan Edwards is your number one guy, right, Michigan's going to crush Fresno State here. They're going to run the hell out of the ball. And I think regardless, you're going to see both Edwards and Mullings get plenty of touches here. And in fact, if Edwards is truly their guy, they might take him out early, throw Mullings out there, you know, bigger, beefier guy who can handle some more touches and just have him chew out the game there. So I think Mullings is a pretty solid start if he's available on your waiver wire or just on your bench somewhere. I'd be personally okay with starting him this week. Another guy that I'm very excited to start this week is Dylan Carson, the super back out of Air Force. I've been burned by, you know, Air Force, their beat reporters and their line coaches before. If it happens again this week, maybe I should just learn a lesson at one point. But also, too, like, everything has pointed to Dylan Carson having a monster year with the Falcons here. They're going up against Merriweather this year, who they should absolutely stomp. They're going to do their thing. They're a triple option team. They're going to run the ball against everybody. Carson probably won't get his usual volume that you would expect out of a super back. But here's the thing. With Carson, with how good he was last year, I don't think he'll necessarily need it. One, again, you got that matchup against Merriweather. Should be able to be more efficient than he would normally be in a game. But two, last year, whenever Carson got the ball, he was averaging 7.3 yards a pop on 68 carries. So pretty solid workload there. And very, very great efficiency there. So I'm personally okay with throwing Carson out there and loading up with him. Last guy I'll throw out here is Damon Ward. I've talked about him plenty of times in the offseason, but you know, he still was drafted pretty late in a lot of leagues outside of the top 50 wide receivers, so I'm throwing him in here. In addition to the fact that I just like Damon Ward, this is one of the only real close shootouts that I think we can really expect this weekend for week one. There's tons of FBS versus FCS opponents. There's tons of Power 4 versus G5 opponents, right? There's going to be blowouts everywhere. And you're going to be sitting there wondering, like, oh, are my guys going to even really play the full 60 minutes in their games? Ward, I think, is actually one of those cases where you can absolutely fully expect him to play full 60 minutes and plenty of scoring opportunities. Vegas has this over-under with North Texas and South Alabama set at 64.5. And South Alabama is only favored by 4.5 points. If you're doing the math at home, they're roughly expecting at least 4 touchdowns between both of those teams right there. And so plenty of scoring opportunities. He should be the number one wide receiver in a very productive CFF system for outside wide receivers there. And Ward's playing in the exact same spot that Jay Macklin played last year. And the staff said he's made plenty of improvements to his game. So my three guys that I'm going to start this week, Khalil Mullings, Dylan Carson, and Damon Ward. Justin, what are your reactions to those three guys?
Yeah, nice. No, I like all three of those examples. And you know, I'll just say again, I think your three are way better than my three if you're going to start players this week in a regular league. I particularly like the Mullings pick. I like the Ward one as well. I think, yeah, I mean, that one is predicted to be a shootout. Ward, you know, I think with North Texas, people are sort of holding their breath there, trying to see who's going to be the guy who steps up in Macklin's absence. Could it be Ward? Could it be Landon Sides? I think his name is. There's a few.
Sides is injured right now. I'd say probably okay. The other one to watch out for is Blair Cornwright. Oh,
yeah, Cornwright.
Excuse me, not Cornwright.
Yeah, no, I like all three of those picks. I really like the Mullings pick. That one could explode. So my three. Yeah, so my three, as I said, they're a little bit more deep shots. So for those of you paying attention to the depth chart news, Iowa released theirs a day ago or a couple of days ago. And redshirt freshman, to all of our surprise, redshirt freshman Kamari Moulton was listed at the top. No or designation, I will add. Sort of a rarity amongst the deluge of depth charts that we've had seen released. So that's interesting. And the OC at Iowa, the new OC, I should say, Tim Lester, who's replacing Brian Ferentz Jr. Tim Lester used to be the head coach at Western Michigan. And when he was there, I think it was like 7 or 8 seasons, they had a 1,000-yard rusher. If it wasn't every season, it was like almost every season, something like that. I did an article on this offense a few months ago. I'm just going on memory. But I do remember that Western Michigan offense under Tim Lester, it was just a factory of 1,000-yard rushers. Now, Iowa under Brian Ferentz Sr. has not really been a program or an offense that has relied on one runner. We've seen a few guys kind of have big games here and there. Caleb Johnson had a few big ones as a freshman. He's kind of in the dungeon now. We don't really know what's happened with him. Moulton seems to be that next guy up. Maybe this is a new sort of look on offense with Tim Lester calling the plays. They get a really nice matchup week one. Illinois State, I want to say
Yes,
something along
Illinois
those
State.
lines. There we go. It's an FCS program. So this could be one that gets wild maybe early on. Look, in a regular league, I'm not going to tell anybody to start Moulton, but if you're in sort of a deeper format or some kind of a restricted league, whether it's Big Ten only or P5 only, maybe there's some justification there to throw him in. Maybe you just get some style points for creativity if he pops off. I mean, that's bragging rights for the rest of the season, I would say. My next listed player is Utah State, Kyrese Rowan. Now, I think everybody's collectively saying, who? Probably you've never heard of this player. So speaking of depth charts, he was listed as a starter early on, or was maybe not listed, but I think someone reporting out of camp said he's been the starter, taking the starting reps at slot receiver. And actually, when I clicked on his profile on Fantrax, apparently he's been impressing. That was the blurb, or at least the last blurb that was on his name. That was a report from like July 18th or something like that. The only reason I know of this player is Jared. We're both in this league and Nate's league. It's a very deep league, 45-man roster, 24 teams, I think. And I picked him up in that league. But full disclosure, that's a best ball league. So I'm not making the decision to start him or not. And again, if you're in a regular league, definitely don't. There's no need to be picking up Rowan this week. But maybe there's something there. They said he's the slot receiver. You never know. I mean, if he pops off week one, you will never get a chance to take him again, probably without spending lots of fab. So you could potentially pick him up right beforehand. And then my last guy is UCLA running back slash receiver, whatever you want to call him, Keegan Jones. So he's kind of bounced around back and forth from running back, receiver. I think he started as a running back, played wide receiver last year under Chip Kelly. Kelly left. And then, new staff comes in. He's back to running back. He actually explained his decision this offseason. So he had hit the transfer portal earlier, decided to come back to UCLA. And when he was asked about it by the media, he basically said, like, yeah, I wanted to get more carries. I never wanted to leave UCLA, but I needed more opportunities. And, when the new staff came in, head coach literally told him personally, I'll help you out with that. Now, I guess we'll be left interpreting what that means. I'm not predicting that he's, the bell cow RB1. This is a staff with more questions than answers. We don't really know what to expect from them. But they do play Hawaii this week. And that could be a game where UCLA scores a lot of points. And you never know. I mean, I think he still has Keaton Jones, I'm talking about, wide receiver eligibility on Fantrax. A lot of you last week, right? You watched the Georgia Tech FSU game, and you're probably watching Jamal Haynes pop off in that game and sort of wishing, oh, I wish I drafted him. Because back when he had wide receiver eligibility, I know Fantrax changed that. And maybe that happens for Keaton Jones, hopefully not. But this is maybe an opportunity for you to get another kind of Jamal Haynes-esque asset. You never know. We'll see what happens. If you missed out on Haynes, maybe this is one that could work for you. He's not a bad option. Again, not in a regular sort of 16-team full FBS league, but if you're in more of a niche or deep sort of format, he's a guy that probably not a bad idea to take a shot on.
Here's what I'll say about your three guys, Justin, because I really like the Moulton and Rowan callouts here, because as I'm looking at this, I think this is a potential sneak peek at waiver wire additions after week one, right? Because like you said, you talk about two good systems there with Moulton and Rowan, right? If Rowan comes out and he's targeted 10 times in that slot position at Utah State, you know me. I'm the systems guy. I'm gonna be like, okay, boom, we got our next Terrell Vaughn here. That's gonna be worth picking up in CFF. He'll be on waiver wire list next week. You already mentioned it with Moulton with Lester there, right? If Moulton comes out against Illinois State and we're talking, like 20 plus carries, 20 plus touches against them, and he looks good, we're probably looking at a waiver wire pickup on the running back position there next week. I'm not as big of a fan of the Keegan Jones. I know you've been a big fan of him all off season. But to your point about the snaps, right? I do think that there is going to be definitely some work bounce back here. Because in 2022, this is what I was going to ask you about if you were going to completely gush over him, was like there was a significant reduction in his snaps last year. In 2022, he had 268 snaps. Last year, he only had 164, and he played only one less game last year. So you can't even blame, like, oh, he got hurt or anything like that. And you talked about, like, him wanting to get more carries. 2022, he had 66 carries. Last year, he had 14. So if he comes back and gets more carries here, I think that you're probably looking at the 66 carries. I still think T.J. Harden's your main guy here, is my point with UCLA, right?
Yeah, my comeback would be, you know, different staff, right? Chip Kelly at the helm there last couple of years. And, you know, it seems like Keegan Jones, they didn't really know what to do with him. I mean, he starts as a wide receiver, they move him around, or he starts as a running back, they move him around to wide receiver. He's just sort of changing positions. They're sort of moving him around, trying to figure out ways to get him the ball. Mm-hmm. He's never really the primary guy there, whether that be right wide receiver or running back. But this is a different staff. And so we'll see what happens, right? You know, I don't want to overstate my enthusiasm of Keegan Jones. I mean, I'm intrigued mildly, but, you know, from what I read in the offseason, it seemed like he looked better in camp than T.J. Harden. Now, again, beat writers and their reports, you have to take with a grain of salt, unfortunately. There's lots of things that are said throughout the offseason that are just categorically not true, that turns out to be. So, you know, you have to sort of take these things in stride. I'm not going to say Keegan Jones is a better player, but you know, the head coach specifically sort of mentioned his efficiency or how mm-hmm. explosive he was with his touches. I don't remember what the exact quote is, but it sounds like they do want him to get him the ball. Now, to your point, fair enough, getting him the ball more might just mean 50 touches versus 14. Okay, it could mean 150 or 200. You never know. It'd be maybe a little bit more surprising. But again, with Keegan Jones, this is not a guy that, you know, I'm advocating that you roster if you're in a regular league right now, 16 teams, whatever, this is not really a player that it's for you, maybe just as a watch list guy, similar to these top two names. If he has a really good week one, he'll probably be a popular name on the wire. But I'm not going to dispute what Jared's saying about these first two, because the ceiling seems higher on those first two because the system's there. They're both younger players, or certainly Moulton is. They kind of just came out of nowhere. You know, we don't really know much about Rowan. So there's a little bit of an intrigue there as well. Whereas Keegan Jones has been around. We've known about him for a while. We've seen him quite a bit. So he's more of, there's a feeling of damaged goods there. But you never know. CFF is riddled with comeback stories, or late breakouts, I guess I should say. So you never know. He's getting creative this week is kind of my approach to it.
No, I gotcha. And one thing I will say in favor of Keegan Jones is, again, this has got to be a topic I have a whole show dedicated to next year. God bless Nate for coming up with this term. But, like, if you're talking about players with nuclear options, right, like, they can just absolutely blow up. Keegan Jones, mixing his efficiency and a T.J. Harden injury, and you are probably talking about a guy with 200-plus touches and probably well over 6 to 7 yards per carry, and that's a recipe for absolute domination in CFF. So if you want to grab him and hold on to him as a guy that is, like, you know, break glass in case of emergency, could absolutely blow up, sure, go right ahead. All right, so that's our starts for this week. Again, mine are probably a bit more standard. Again, Justin's are definitely for if you're in, like, a deeper league where you need to kind of come up with some higher upside plays to try to push your team over the top. Definitely guys to look out for there. Let's look at some of these sits, though. So again, same deal. Each of us got three guys here. I'm going to start with mine. Again, I think for the most part, this was relatively easy because I think almost all of our guys were G5 guys going against Power 4 opponents. Just not something you want to really deal with. And then for two of my guys, it's, you know, low scoring games where I think that they're probably going to be a little outmatched. Quick clarification on what this will look like going forward. Going forward, this will be players in the top 40 at their respective positions, whatever week we are on during that week. But for this week, again, we're only doing players that were in the top 36 at their respective positions. So players that you are likely drafted and are expecting to start. So I'll start with my first guy here. And we kind of touched on it earlier with Hawaii, Pafele Ashlock. I like the volume. I actually think that there's a possibility, given what Vegas thinks, that there's some opportunity to score here. So I don't think this is like a complete sit. Like, if you have to start him, I think you're okay to do so for the most part, but I think if there's better options, you got to go and try to find that, especially with the amount of blowouts expected this weekend. Probably go after that. Because you got Hawaii, they're on the road against a powerful opponent. They typically, historically, don't do extremely well unless it's like, you know, a Stanford or something like that, right? I know a lot of people expect UCLA to be this kind of horrible team in 2024, like bottom of the Big Ten kind of deal. But their roster is still pretty solid. According to C2C Winning Edge, like they're ranked 41st in defensive roster strength. So there's still the pieces there to really to have a pretty solid unit there. And once again, like that power four to G5 mismatch, that could spell you some trouble there. So I'm sitting Ashlock where I can. Next up here is Riley Leonard, quarterback out of Notre Dame. This one, as I kind of mentioned, it really is all about the style of gameplay that we expect out of this game this weekend. Notre Dame's going up against Texas A&M. They're on the road. This is one of the few true road games that Notre Dame has this year. It's one of the toughest environments in the country. You got Riley Leonard coming back after missing a good chunk of last year. He missed a good chunk of the spring, so he's going to be a little bit raw coming out. He's coming off that injury. The game total is only 46.5, so you're not talking about, you know, both sides putting up a ton of points here. They're expecting maybe 3 touchdowns per side here. In addition, there's a couple of things here that are just roster-wise aren't really going well for him, especially along that offensive line. His left tackle is a true freshman, which that's his blindside tackle, so that's very unfortunate there. You're going up against Texas A&M's defensive line, which whatever numbers you look at, according to C2C Winning Edge, like whether you look at, you know, 247, On3, Rivals, anybody, Texas A&M has the 5th to 7th best defensive line in the country when it comes to talent. And so as a true freshman starter, as talented as he probably is, probably not the best thing to have there. And it'd be one thing if that was the only thing to be concerned about with his O-line, but the rest of the offensive line has 6 combined starts among the rest of them. So it's a very inexperienced line playing in a tough environment there against a really good D-line. I think Leonard's going to have a pretty tough day, probably going to be one of his lower performances of the year. Last one that I'll throw out here is not just because I'm a Georgia fan, but I am going to say Phil Mafah. I know a lot of you drafted him in the first round, but just be real, y'all. Like, just like in the past, going up against the Alabamas, the Ohio States of the world, most of the time you don't want to start your fantasy guys against some of the top defenses, and I don't think it's going to change here with Clemson here. I think Clemson will be playing in a negative game script. It's going to be a lower scoring game. The game total here is 48.5. With Georgia being a 2-touchdown favorite, that basically leaves, should do the math off the top of my head, but that basically leaves like maybe 14 to 17 points that Clemson's expected to score in this game total. So that's not a ton of scoring opportunities here. Again, playing a negative game script, that's going to take the ball out of Mafah's hands when it comes to rushing. Yes, he can still catch passes. He had 21 receptions last year, but it's really not his bread and butter at all. He had 5.1 yards per catch last year. That was the lowest on the team among people with 10 catches or more for Clemson last year. He did average 5.4 yards per carry last year, which is obviously pretty good, but that's not going to happen against Georgia's front seven unless something horrifically goes wrong for the Dogs there. So I'm sitting Mafah. I think that just like with the amount of blowouts there, with the amount of positive game scripts you'll have with so many other teams, you can find other running backs to go with than Phil Mafah. So Justin, your thoughts on my 3 guys that I'm sitting there? Am I being too harsh on any of those 3 guys? What do you think?
Yeah, well, no, I like the list. I think the reasoning is sound. I guess a few thoughts on the last pick there on Mafah. So I, of course, understand sort of the logic about playing against Georgia. And for those who don't know, just full disclosure, both Jared and I are fans of the Bulldogs. We both follow the program. One thing I'll say about Georgia's defense, and of course, they're going to have a good defense this year, but that interior of the defensive line, you know, for the last sort of season, ever since JC left, Jalen Carter, a couple of years ago, you know, last year wasn't quite the same standard that we've become accustomed to. And there were a few teams that had success running the football. Cody Schrader from Mizzou had a very productive day. So we saw that some teams can do it. And Clemson, although they're not what they used to be, at least they haven't been, we'll see this year, They might be able to find some success because they recruit at a decent level, not the same level of Georgia, of course, but they recruit at a high P4 level. And they've got, good players as well. And you're right that they're probably not going to score a lot, but Mafah is kind of unique in this case where if they are going to score, he probably has like a really high chance of being the guy who scores all of their touchdowns if they're going to score one or two. So I wouldn't hate the play if you're starting Mafah this week. But again, it's one of those, and I think we discussed this last year, it's one of those counterintuitive things for maybe newer players or especially those coming from the NFL side, the concept of sitting your first round pick, right? This game is a little bit more nuanced, a little more complex, and you have to really sort of account for these various different factors. Your first round pick is not a guy that has to start every week. And certainly, Mafah is not going to be probably the highest scoring running back that's available to you this week. So Jared's correct in that you should look around at your other options and you don't necessarily have to immediately sit Mafah, but probably there's better options out there based on the matchup because it is week one, as Jared said, and there's going to be lots of blowouts galore, really. So that I think it's a good list. So my list, I have, and it's sort of similar reasoning to what you were just describing with your guys. Jalen Buckley from Western Michigan, they're playing Wisconsin. That's my first pick. Malik Sherrod, Fresno State, they play Michigan. Second pick, Torrey Horton, Colorado State, they play Texas. So it's the same narrative in all three cases, actually. So Jalen Buckley, they play Wisconsin. I just don't trust a MAC team playing against the P4. I'll just sort of lay it out plainly. Could he have a good game? Maybe. Would I bet on it? No. I suspect he's going to have a rough go these first couple weeks. They play Wisconsin. I think they play Ohio State next week. So, hat
Nice.
tip to their scheduler. Nice job. And then Malik Sherrod playing against Michigan. You discussed this game a few segments ago where, we kind of expect that Michigan's going to be scoring a lot and really sort of bullying them. And that's not really great news or a great recipe for the running back for the other team, for which is Malik Sherrod, Fresno State. I feel pretty good about Sherrod this year. Unfortunately, their coach stepped down late, which kind of created some uncertainty. But overall, I feel pretty good in his regular games. But this is not a game that I feel good about him. Especially those running backs where you're in a negative game script. Sometimes wide receivers, you can kind of talk yourself into it, like, okay, they're going to be throwing it all game. Maybe they catch the screen and take it to the house. Who knows? But the running backs is a little harder in the games like this. And so on that note, if you are gonna sort of disagree with my advice and go for it anyways, Torrey Horton versus Texas, I'm not saying you absolutely have to sit him, but it's not a great game script or not a great matchup. I'm pretty high on Colorado State's offense overall. I think they're gonna have a really good year, and I'm high on Torrey Horton, of course, who isn't. But Texas is a top five program. They're probably gonna blow the doors off of the Rams if everything goes as expected. And so Horton might not even be in the game come fourth quarter. You never know. I suspect you probably have a better option that's available to you this week. So I would test out the waters elsewhere before you immediately plug Horton in.
I'll make a couple of points here. One with Malik Sherrod, I think it's fully expecting, or I fully expect to see a early retirement day for Malik Sherrod against Michigan. Again, he's been banged up and injured in the fall camp. Like, this staff knows how much Sherrod means for this running game. I mean, yeah, they got Elijah Gilliam, and he was pretty solid when Sherrod was down last year, but when Sherrod came back, he immediately took over as the main guy again. So clearly, the staff knows how good he is. I really don't think they're going to risk him that much against the likes of a Michigan D line, right? One, like you said, the game script's going to be there. He's not they're not going to want to hand him the ball because they're going to want to pass more anyway. But even so, like, the injury risk there, I think, is too great. So I would definitely sit Sherrod everywhere that you can possibly get him. Horton is also a little bit interesting. I've been kind of going back and forth. I've sat him in spots, but Texas was a bottom 30 defense in the country last year when it came to passing defense. Now, granted, they went and added some pieces in the portal. Maybe, things improve there, right? Like, these things aren't stagnant year to year. But if that isn't fixed, we know how Colorado State can be when it comes to their passing attack. And so I do think that there's, if I'm going to start one guy out of the three here, it's going to be Torrey Horton. right? I think
Oh,
that.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. Yeah, Horton for sure. Almost by virtue of the fact that he's a wide receiver playing against an overmatched opponent versus these running backs. So definitely agree with you there. One thing I will say is, yeah, Texas, their defense, in terms of their defense, the secondary was the worst part last year, and by all accounts, probably be the worst component of their defense this year. But that's that as well. We have to take it with a grain of salt. They're bottom 30 in the FBS, but they're playing mostly Big 12, like other P4 opponents in their conference
Yeah,
schedule.
clearly.
This is a G5 team, right? So, it's a little different, but it's a good point to make as well.
All righty. Well, we got a little bit of time here, Justin. We'll try to knock out some of these sit start questions that were submitted to us. First one up here after I get our, of course, little things back. Here we go. First one up here from Steve. By the way, all of these questions have been submitted to us through the at Chasing the Natty Twitter account. I put up a message every week. Obviously, again, we're not going to be able to get to as many as we have in the past here, but we do want to be able to answer these questions for you here at the end, and that is easily the best way to get your question on the show. The other best way to get your question on the show, and this is my fault for not putting this in the instructions of this year's tweet. Please try to keep your questions to three or less people. One makes the graphics making a lot easier, but also two, like I want to help you guys. We want to help you guys with your teams and everything like that, but we don't want to run your teams for you, right? You have to be able to make decisions for yourself, at least to a certain point, right? Give us two, three guys that you're deciding between one or two spots, right? We can help you out with that. We can help you decide who to sit, who to start between that. We don't want you to give us your entire eight-man running back room and be like, all right, who should I start out of this group? Like, that's not what we're here to do. We're here to help you with the ones that like you thought about it, and I can't decide. So you guys help me out here. So that's a great way to increase your chances of actually getting your question onto the show, because otherwise it'll be a 0% chance. Let's start with the first one here. This is from Steve at SJJ or at SJJackso2 on Twitter. He is asking us to pick between two quarterbacks here going against FCS opponents. Obviously, always kind of tricky early on here when you got FCS opponents. How long are they actually going to play? He is asking us between Avery Johnson, the quarterback out of Kansas State, or Brady Cook, the quarterback out of Missouri. So I'll go ahead and answer this one for myself because my reasoning here is actually pretty simple. Yes, Avery Johnson was the guy that you were drafting higher in leagues. Clearly, the upside is there, but it's week one. You're going up against FCS opponents, which are already kind of tricky up and down kind of situations, right? I think personally, it is going to be better for you to go with the quarterback that you just know more about, and that is Brady Cook out of these two. I think Brady Cook is, a locked in solid 20, 25 points per game here versus Avery Johnson. Like, yeah, he could score 40 points, but there's also games last year where he was playing a bit and he only scored 10 points. I think that you just kind of go with the safer play out of these two, the guy that you know a little bit better. And again, simple reasoning, but that's just how I'm thinking about this. What about you, Justin?
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, shout out to Steve. He's an active CFF player. He's a member in my home league, Golden Pig Invitational League. So shout out to him. Good luck to him in every league that I'm not in. I'm going to go with the opposite answer of Jared. So I'm going to start Avery and sit Brady Cook. And the reason being, so both play FCS opponents, and it's actually sort of related to what Jared said. Yes, we know more about Brady Cook. I think Missouri knows more about him. He's just the starter all year last year. And for that reason, I think they're gonna just keep him on a pitch count and take him out earlier. Whereas Avery Johnson, this is his first year starting. He's the young kid. The staff don't really know what they have in him. This is a great opportunity for them to sort of let him cut loose, see what he can do. Don't have to be reckless with him. Don't get him injured, but see what he can do. Get his feet wet. I know he played a little bit last year, but snaps are at a premium for young players, and I think this is a great opportunity for him to really sort of get a feel for the offense, kick the season off right. And it's week one. You don't know a lot about these players. So on one school of thinking, yes, sort of gravitate to the guys that the more known commodities. On the other end, your opponents are somewhat in a similar position where, the week one is a week where there's incredible boom and busts. A lot of players that we've drafted that we think are going to be good turn out to not have great games that week one. So there's going to be all kinds of boom and busts happening week one. So don't fear, I guess, the unknown with Avery Johnson. I say embrace it. And so, yeah, I'm picking Avery.
All righty. Two different schools of thought for you guys there. So we'll put these back here and move on to another question here, another quarterback question. This one comes to us from Tech Brottle at Tech Brottle on Twitter. And he is asking us to choose between KJ Jefferson, the quarterback out of UCF, or Nico Iamalieva, the quarterback out of Tennessee. And don't quite get what I had last time, right? Last time I had a clear starter, never seen versus a guy we hadn't really seen before. Both these guys, I mean, we've seen KJ Jefferson before, but it was in a different offense, right? Nico, we saw in the bowl game, but like we haven't seen him as a full-time starter here, so I can't really rely on that. What I will rely on is I'm going to go with the guy that, again, once again, both these guys are playing FCS opponents, so that's pretty much a wash at that point, right? I think I'm going to go with Nico here. I think KJ Jefferson offers a higher upside in terms of, he has that rushing ability, plays in Gus Malzahn's offense that can go absolutely crazy against a FCS opponent here. But Iamalieva is more familiar with his system, right? He's been with Tennessee for a year. I think that there's going to be less kinks to really figure out with that offense going forward there. I like the weapons that Nico has. And so I think that Tennessee is gunning for a playoff spot this year, right? They're going to want to put the world on notice pretty early on here. So I think that they're going to want a coming out party for Nico here pretty early on. He already did very well against Iowa's defense last year. Let's let him put up some numbers against an FCS opponent here. What about you, VP?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I'm going to have to agree with Jared on this one. Similar reasoning, I guess, to last, although it isn't an apples to apples comparison because KJ Jefferson, although he's a veteran player, this is a new system for him, new team. So I think they'll also want to see what they have in him in this week one and try to use him. But, Nico, similar reasoning with Avery, young player, first year starting, a lot of hype. This is a great opportunity to just work him in. I know he played in the bowl game last year, but this first year being the starter, all the pressure on him, it's a great opportunity. Let him cut it loose, see what you have. And Tennessee is in the resume building business this year because it's a 12-team playoff and they have a realistic shot. They should be one of those teams. And so they're gonna want to keep their pedal to the floor, as Jared said. And so I think they light this FCS team up.
All righty. We'll move our tokens back there. And let's move on to Drew's question here at Drew Christians 18 on Twitter. And he is asking us to start two wide receivers between three guys here. We got Josh Kelly, wide receiver out of Texas Tech, Rock Taylor, wide receiver out of Memphis, Jordan Moore, wide receiver out of Duke. All three are going up against FCS opponents. Really just tells you what kind of weekend we're in for with college football that we have barely any actual, FBS versus FBS matchups here to discuss. So all three, like the opponents are a wash basically here, Justin. So I'll actually throw it over to you first, man. Like how are you, which two are you going to start between these three?
Yeah, well, like so many of these questions, these are three great options. I don't think you can go wrong with any of them. So I'll just say that right off the bat. Of the three, I love me some Jordan Moore this year. I think he's going to get peppered with targets, converted quarterback to receiver a few years ago, was productive last year with subpar QB play. Not because Leonard's bad, but he just wasn't healthy and they had a backup playing a lot of the time. And they play an FCS opponent this year. They've got a new OC who came over from SMU. I'm really high on Jordan Moore. I have him in a lot of leagues, albeit not leagues where I'm choosing him to start. They're best ball leagues, but if I was choosing him to start, I absolutely would. So I'm going to lock him in as one of the starters. As far as the other two, again, there's no wrong answer here. We spoke about Josh Kelly a little bit earlier. I think he's going to be a big part of that Texas Tech offense. Rock Taylor, we know, is a big part of that Memphis offense coming off the year that he just came off of. So, although I preached embracing sort of the risk week one, if we're sort of combing through these two options and splitting hairs here, I think I'm going to go with Rock Taylor. especially because we're choosing two here. I feel like Jordan Moore is kind of a boom or bust week one. We don't quite know what to expect. You know, it's new offense, new quarterback. Rock Taylor at least brings you some level of consistency or stability. Same quarterback, same staff, basically the same setup. So I like sort of pairing those two together. But again, I don't think there's a wrong answer here.
I think you put it very, very well. This is a I think versus I know kind of situation, right? And I think that I'm going to agree with you again, unfortunately, for, you know, content's sake, right? Like, it's better when we disagree. But I think I'll agree with you here. I would go Rock Taylor and Jordan Moore as my two guys because I know their role within the offense, right? And I think I know what Josh Kelly is going to do for Texas Tech this year. But with Texas Tech, I think there's a wider variety of what happens there, right? Yes, Kelly could be a top-end CFF wide receiver this year. The Zach Kittley offense is back, and it's just completely to the moon with him. It could also be what Texas Tech's been the last 2 years, where very spread out. Yes, Kelly could be wide receiver one, but like that's what, 600, 700 yards on the season. Nothing that you're gonna write home about versus Rock Taylor and Jordan Moore. We know they're probably the wide receiver ones in their system. We know. In Taylor's case, it's going to be an offense that scores quite a bit there. Moore should be clearly the number one guy. I think he's the only wide receiver on Duke's depth chart that didn't have an or next to his name. So clearly, they know exactly what they're doing with him there. I'm going to go with Taylor and Moore here as well. I think that's the safe way to go here. And then you figure out what to do with Kelly after this week or two. Let me put our tokens back. We keep it rocking and rolling here. I actually kind of like this. I like doing the, you know, sit starts in the middle, and then we do like these questions rapid fire near the end. I think when we have less, you know, depth chart news to front load the show with and everything, we'll be able to fit in a lot more of these questions just in general moving forward. So that could be
Yeah, I
good.
agree. And with this beautiful graphic too, that's just moving back and forth so seamlessly, this is flowing nicely.
So let's go ahead and we'll go to A Wood Sports here at A Wood Sports on Twitter. He is asking us another wide receiver question. This one also includes Jordan Moore. In the future, I'll try not to include the same guys in different questions, but he's asking us to compare this to Cole Wilson, who is also playing an FCS opponent, and then Derwin Burgess, who's playing against Georgia Southern or playing against Boise State. He is a wide receiver out of Georgia Southern. So, Justin, again, I'll throw this over to you first, man. Out of these three guys here, which one are you starting?
Yeah, I mean, okay. Well, looking through these three, so we spoke a little about Jordan Moore in the previous segment. So if you're tuning in, the person who asked this question, and you skipped that part, which you shouldn't, but just go back and see what we said about Jordan Moore there. Derwin Burgess, Georgia Southern wide receiver. So he's been good in CFF for a few seasons now. Now his running mate Caleb Hood is no longer there. And presumably that means more targets for Burgess, but not necessarily a given. Maybe somebody else just steps up for Hood. But we feel pretty good that he's probably going to be the wide receiver one there. Cole Wilson playing at Texas State, great offense, and he had a good season last year as well. And they've got a great opponent playing against FCS versus, say, Georgia Southern, who's playing not a terrible opponent, but it's another G5. Cole Wilson, of course, though, in his offense is wide receiver two. We kind of know that, or we feel pretty good that that's the pecking order because that's what it was last year. So we're just extrapolating there. So in this case, it looks like we have two wide receiver ones. We feel pretty good about Jordan Moore and Burgess, and then a wide receiver two, but maybe a better matchup than, say, Burgess. I'm still going to choose, and I gushed about him in the last segment, Jordan Moore. He's the guy I'm going with. We know he's wide receiver one, and he plays, you know, an FCS opponent, which doesn't get much better than that for week one. So, you know, I think he checks the boxes for me here.
I am going to do a slightly different way of thinking here. I think if I was doing this personally in a league, I probably would lean more out of these three options. 'Cause like you said, he's the only three out of these guys that we know is locked in for wide receiver one production. But I do think there's something to be said about Burgess playing all 60 minutes here, right? Like with FCS opponents, you never know when your starters are going to be sat down and everything. You could finish your day after two quarters. Now, maybe you go bonkers in those first two quarters, right? But you could also end the day with four targets and 25 yards, right? Versus Burgess, Georgia Southern will be in a dogfight with Boise State. Like, and they'll be like just behind enough to where I think that they'll keep their starters out there, and they're also going to be passing the ball quite quite a bit. I mean, one, it's already an air raid system with Clay Helton, so like that's kind of a given. But even still, like they'll be forced to pass even more. So I'm actually going to lean Burgess here out of the three guys here. And, you know, Awood, if you're listening to this, man, just it's two schools of thought. Either you go with the guy that you know is locked into the wide receiver one for his team should score a lot against an FCS opponent, or do you go with the guy that's probably going to be able to play for actually all 4 minutes here? So I think we got time for one more question here, Justin. So I think we'll go ahead and try to knock that out. This one, last one comes to us from Michael Erickson at MErickson 2512 on Twitter. Full PPR league, which, by the way, again, another great way to get your question on the show. If you leave us some league information, like scoring information like that, whether it's PPR, 6-point passing, touchdown, 4-point passing, anything that can help us make a decision there. He's got a flex spot he's dealing with here. He's got Deion Burks, Dylan Carson, or Ches Malusi. Burks is going up against Temple. Dylan Carson, as I mentioned earlier, is going up against Merriweather, which is an FCS opponent. And you have Ches Malusi going up against Western Michigan. I think that because it's full PPR, I'm going to lean Burks out of these three guys, even though I did say that I do like Dylan Carson quite a bit here. But Carson's not going to catch any passes. So like that's already going to be a big downplay for him in a full PPR format. Versus Burks, he should be the wide receiver one for Oklahoma. Based on all the camp reports and everything I've heard of Oklahoma, he should be the wide receiver one. Nick Anderson, very likely not going to play this weekend. He's listed as a wide receiver two on the depth chart. I have a very sneaking suspicion he will not be playing this weekend. That's going to open up even more opportunities for Burks to really go bananas against a really bad Temple defense, at least compared to Oklahoma. I think Burks will have a great weekend this weekend. Versus Ches Malusi, he was kind of the first guy I threw out here because, again, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, what is that health situation look like? He's been practicing. He's been held out. He's been practicing. They're being precautionary with him. He's back in full go against Western Michigan. I feel like if there's any kind of doubt lingering there about his health, they'll sit him, let some of the younger guys get some run there. So I'm going to go Burks out of these three guys. What about you, Justin?
Yeah, again, unfortunate. Well, maybe not so unfortunate for the person who's asking. I have to agree. It's a great matchup for Oklahoma week one. And similar to some of those QB sit starts that we were talking about earlier, you got a young QB who's in his second year who, yeah, he played in the bowl game, but this is really his first real test. I know it's not a great opponent, but he's starting for the first time. And, you know, Oklahoma is a big program that has big aspirations. And if they're going to go where they want to go, Jackson Arnold has to be playing well. And this is a great sort of week one primer to just kick things off, get things going. Yeah, you have the possibility that Burks gets pulled from the game later on. But I don't know. I feel the best about him just being productive of any of these three players. And I'm not really going to worry about whether he gets pulled later on in the game. That's more of a downstream concern for me right now. I think in that wide receiver room, it seems like they're all sort of coming back from injuries or nursing injuries. So, yeah, I think it's a great matchup for OU. I think their star players are going to score lots of points in this one, whether that's Sawchuk and Barnes, Burks, who, as you mentioned, went ham in the spring game. And I think they're going to, you know, want to let Arnold let it fly in this game just to see what they have, get his feet wet, and Burks should be a recipient in a lot of those passes.
Yeah, and again, you mentioned the whole, like, you know, there's always a possibility Burks get pulled early, but the good thing about this weekend for the most part is that everybody's kind of dealing exactly with that, right? Like, everybody has the opportunity of getting pulled early. You kind of have to roll your dice and see where things land when it comes to those kind of matchups. All righty, Justin, that brings us to the end of our show. Again, appreciate you coming on here, man. It's always a blast to have you on. Obviously, your in-season content is about to kick off here. Why don't you tell the folks out there what it is you'll be working on once, you know, the season's actually kicked off later this week?
Sure, man. Well, look, thanks for having me back on. This was a lot of fun. Appreciate the opportunity. It's always great to chat CFF with you on these shows. Yeah, so I do content at Campus Again and at Volume Pigs, which is my own sort of Substack. I'll be tagged in this post, and you can just follow the Twitter link. You'll find my website. It's pretty self-explanatory. I write about college football.
Yeah, again, and Justin does absolutely phenomenal work breaking down players every single week. He does his waiver wire article every single week. And you will continue to do these player breakdowns throughout the season. I believe you did them last year as well when guys were breaking out. You kind of give the – what you do a really good job of a lot of times when guys break out is that you give the background as to why they're breaking out, what kind of system has – have we seen this before with this coach before, that kind of stuff. So it's immeasurable value with the stuff that Justin puts out there each and every week. So absolutely you should go and subscribe to his Substack. Again, remind me of the price off the top of his. Is it $5 a month?
Well, with inflation and just because the season is more popular, I have put the price up a little higher because most people just pay during the season rather than season long. So it's $7.99 US okay. now per month. It's still relatively cheap. There's a lot of content, as Jared mentioned. So I think it is worth it. But you know, if you don't have the means, no problem. There's a lot of free content too. So.
Absolutely. Again, it's immeasurable stuff. Again, you were the CFF breakout of the year last year for a very, very good reason. So, again, like reminder to everybody else, again, we are doing in-season content. We'll have two shows. Next week, we'll have the Waiver Wire and recap show, and then we'll have our sit, start, and preview show that Wednesday. But with everything else said, we have come to the end of our show. I want to thank all of you guys out there for listening. If you have not already, leave a like, comment, and subscribe if you're watching this on the YouTube side of things. If you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show. Leave a 5-star review. I have seen a couple of 5-star reviews come in recently. I appreciate those of you greatly for who have been doing that. Make sure you guys check out the rest of the Campus of Canton Podcast Network for any show or a bunch of shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. Like I said, we'll see you guys back here next Monday when we'll have our first week of CFF in the books and things will have really hit the ground running at that point. Until then, really appreciate you guys. I hope you have a wonderful and blessed week one. See y'all then.